Jeez, is it Friday yet?
Well, yes, it is. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. Folks, are you ready? Because today we have the man, the myth, the legend of everything SI, the one and only Dean of Teledyne LaCroix Signal Integrity Academy, Eric Bogatin. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Eric at this year's Altium Live, and we talked about a whole bunch of cool stuff. The downsides of open source designs, why designing return paths are like one of the final scenes in the movie Ghostbusters, yes, the Keymaster Gozer one from the 80s, and why signal integrity noise can be like rogue waves. Also, quick note, Eric, who was also one of the keynotes at this year's Altium Live, and I were recording outside for this interview, so you may hear the occasional bird or the more than occasional helicopter flying by. Just FYI. Let's go.
My guest today is Eric Bogatin, who was a keynote at this year's Altium Live. Thank you so much for joining me, Eric.
Amelia, it's really a pleasure to join you today to chat about Altium Live.
So you presented a keynote at this year's Altium Live called Breaking Bad Often, A Downside of Open Source Designs. First, absolutely love the title. And I don't think the downsides of open source designs are talked about a lot these days. So you mentioned that often designs are published on the web in spite of their bad design features. So let me talk about that with you a bit. And why do you think that is?
First of all, I can't take credit for the title. It was really Junie Warner that came up with the title. We talked about some of the things I'm involved with in my classes at CU. We teach a circuit board design class, and I mentioned how when we look at designs that are online and available for download, that oftentimes they have poor examples shown in them. One of the boards that we actually use in our class for the second board spin is an Arduino board. And I love Arduinos. They're great. The Uno uses the 328 Atmega 328 microcontroller. It's a great design. It's revolutionized and opened up physical computing to the masses. I teach Arduino workshops. We have kids in there from 8 years old to 80 years old. So it's really enabling tools. I love the Arduino. But the boards that have been designed and that are in high volume production, over a million of them have been produced. The board design wasn't really designed with good signal integrity habits. It was designed for connectivity. You know, the first step, you put the components on the board, you lay them out so that, you know, they make sense in terms of where the connectors are, and so you move them around so you don't have a lot of routing congestion, and then you route the connectivity, the connections. If the board will work in a solderless breadboard application with a lot of wires going all over the place, it doesn't matter what the board looks like. If you can do it with all the jumper wires all around, the interconnects are transparent. And you can make an Arduino board in a solderless breadboard with jumper wires going all over the place. So the interconnects are relatively transparent for an Arduino board, but it doesn't mean the board doesn't have a lot of noise that you can measure. And so when you look at the design, it was the Arduino boards, the commercial ones you buy from Asia off the shelf, they're all basically the same. The parts were placed, they were routed for connectivity, routed on both layers, they're all two-layer boards, and then copper fill was added to the top and the bottom. And when you add copper fill, the rationale seems to be, okay, I need return paths, so I'm just going to throw a lot of copper. Copper is good, copper carries current, I'm going to throw copper everywhere, and that's going to be my return path. And if you engineer it that way, the return paths aren't necessarily what you think they are. Just because there's copper around doesn't mean you've got very good return paths. And in fact, the performance can be, and in fact is, terrible when it comes to ground bounce because of all the discontinuities in the return path. And when you do it that way, you're not paying attention to the return path design. And for good signal quality, you want to pay as much attention to the return path design as the signal paths. And when you throw copper at it in a copper pour or copper fill, then you're relying on pure luck to assemble the return paths so that they're in the right way. And so that's what these boards are. There's copper fill. And so when you look at it through a light, so you can see the open spaces where the copper is there, you see huge areas where there's a whole bunch of signal lines, digital signals, with no return path. And so that means that the return path they're taking is off to the side somewhere. They're all coupled together. You have huge loop mutual inductances, and you have a lot of crosstalk, a lot of ground bounce. And so we grab some of these boards. I get some of the off-the-shelf boards, and that's one of the first labs my students do, is we go and measure the crosstalk on these boards. And you find it's really large. We have almost a volt peak-to-peak crosstalk on, you know, 5-volt signals because of the really crappy return paths. And yet there are a million of these, more than a million of these boards that have been produced that are out there. But because the Arduino is so robust and it's only operating at 16 megahertz, that you can get away with a lot of this noise without obvious problems. I think there are some designs where it doesn't work for some reason, or every now and then there's a glitch, doesn't work. You know, we sometimes call them black swan events, very unusual, rare events. Yeah. Was that the perfect storm? Is that the metaphor of you get the convergence of three or four things that, worst case, that happen all at the same time? My buddy Steve Sandler, he says it's rogue waves. You get the perfect combination of these four or five different waves that happen to be exactly in phase, all to add up to give you one giant wave bigger than you expect. And I think if you don't control the noise in some situations with a certain bit pattern or a certain combination of timing and programming going on, the microcode just happens to give you like this rogue wave of a lot of extra noise that all adds up at the same time. That it's hard to debug, but if you look at background noise on the lines and the switching noise for any one I/O, you see it very clearly. And you can imagine how that can add up to be one of these rogue wave events. So it's an example of, it's a design you get off the internet. It's open source. A lot of companies have implemented it. Just because someone else is using it doesn't mean it represents good habits to follow. And that's the principle that I talked about at the keynote today at Altium Live. And that's one of the principles that I try to teach in my classes, that every engineer, every student has to take responsibility for their design. Just because you see it on the internet doesn't mean that it's a good design or recommended. And I showed the cartoon, a very famous cartoon from The New Yorker, in 1993, when the internet was just coming out. It's a very insightful cartoon. I can't remember the artist. But in The New Yorker, it was a picture of these two dogs, and one of them is at his computer typing away, and he's saying to his other dog friend there, he says, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. And it's that theme, that there's so much information online, very rarely is it curated. You don't know the quality of the design that you're getting when you grab it offline, and that you can learn bad habits if you do that. And I showed some examples of it, and also some of the good habits that you should work toward that will minimize a lot of these common problems.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about design practices. Now, what kind of design practices in general do you think need to be considered here?
I've been looking at few layer boards, 2-4 layer boards a lot. And I tell my students, the two most important design principles to follow, or kind of best design practices, are about the signal paths and about the power paths. And for signal paths, I always say that when you start a design with a schematic, the schematic tells you, here are the parts I'm going to use, and here's how they're connected together. It tells you nothing about the properties of the interconnects. And that's what signal integrity, power integrity is really all about, and EMC is all about. It's about how the interconnects can screw things up. Once you have your design established for connectivity, so yep, everything's going to be connected correctly, then it's all about noise control. Unfortunately, if you're in the interconnect design or fabrication or development business, it's kind of disappointing to realize that all you're going to be doing in your product, your interconnects, is screwing things up.
Right.
And it's really a question of, okay, I got to minimize how much I'm going to screw it up. Because no interconnect design is going to improve the performance above and beyond what the active devices, the silicon or the active components, are going to do. That's where the performance comes from. All the interconnect is going to do, at best, is not screw it up. And at worst, you want to minimize how much it's going to screw it up.
Right.
And so once connectivity is established, then it's a matter of how do you minimize the noise sources you can anticipate, because you know here are the problems that will arise. If you know ahead of time, you can anticipate and design them out, and hopefully you won't have any unexpected problems that arise. And so that's where the two biggest problems that will arise because of the interconnect is about crosstalk between the signal paths. So there's the self-aggression noise of reflection noise, that sort of thing that's easy to control. But the subtle one is the mutual aggression, the crosstalk between one aggressor line and one victim line, or multiple victim line. And there, the number one biggest source of crosstalk is the return path control. If you have a nice wide plane, the return currents of the signal lines are going to be relatively confined in that plane under the signal lines. They won't interact. You'll have crosstalk, but you know, equal capacitive inductive cross, you can manage that. But when you screw up that return path, when the return path is not a nice wide plane, when you have a gap in the return path, when you have to have the return current snake around some discontinuity in the return path, it dramatically increases the loop inductance of that path, but more importantly, it introduces mutual inductance to another signal path that shares that distorted return path. And when you have overlapping return paths and you have a screwed up return path, that's the recipe for ground bounce, for crosstalk. Because it is so common, I see it in so many designs, the number one most important principle is don't screw up your return paths and don't overlap return paths. It's kind of the message from the first Ghostbusters when they're using their proton beams in order to take out the demon, and they're saying, don't cross the streams, right? Okay, well, that's the same message about designing return paths. Don't cross the streams. Don't overlap the return currents, and that will dramatically reduce the ground bounce problems. So that's the number one most important design rule. And that's why we use a plane, a ground plane, sort of the return path plane, so that it helps ensure that continuous return path so we don't screw up the return path. The second important design rule is about the power path. And there, it's about the placement of the decoupling capacitors. And it's all about, what is it you're trying to do? What's the problem you're trying to avoid? And there are a number of problems in the power distribution path. But one of them that we want to try to minimize is, again, it's a self-aggression noise. It's when the IOs on the particular chip, when they're switching, you get a lot of current switching, that current has to come from someplace. And it comes first from the on-die capacitance that's always there. And then it comes from the local decoupling capacitors, wherever they are. And in getting from the pads on the die to where your decoupling capacitors are, you have some interconnect inductance. And to reduce the noise on the die, when you have all those IOs switching and all that current switching, you want to reduce that interconnect inductance as much as possible. And that is the number one biggest, best design practice to pay attention to when adding decoupling capacitors to the board for IO and also for core logic as well. You want to mount the decoupling capacitors with as low a loop inductance from the pads on the package to where the capacitors are as you can. And I see so many boards, this Arduino board, for example, where the decoupling capacitors are way off to the side of where the microcontroller is because there was room over there to place it. Because of how they did the routing, they had it congested near the microcontroller. But way over in the corner, they asked, oh, we'll put the capacitor over there. It's connected, isn't it? But it's that loop inductance that's really important. And so that says, gee, you know, the first components to place on the board and then route should be the decoupling capacitors. They are more important than the signal paths. Signal paths, as long as they have continuous ground, you can make them as long as you want. They're going to be fine. But it's those decoupling capacitors that you need to have in close proximity with low loop inductance. So those are the two most important rules I insist my students understand by the time they finish my class, you know, among other things. But those are two important design rules.
All right. So for my audience who may not know, you are the dean of the Teledyne LaCroix Signal Integrity Academy. So, Eric, tell me, what's all involved with this position?
Okay, so for, gosh, 35 years now, I've been going around literally the world and doing training classes in signal integrity, power integrity. So it was in the early 90s. Yeah, it's almost like 30 years, more than 30 years now. My wife, Susan, and I, we started a company to go around the world and do training classes in signal integrity and power integrity. And I focused at the time on best design practices. I developed a half a dozen of these classes and gave them a lot. And then about almost 10 years ago, our company was acquired by LaCroix. You know, I think measurements are auxiliary to the design process. And so it was a nice fit with LaCroix's measurement equipment and measurement line. So I incorporated a lot of the design principles with the measurement of those principles as well. And so as part of LaCroix, we took all of the classes that I did, the live classes, we recorded them, and then we posted them online. We created a website to stream all of the classes. So we break them up into 10, 15-minute little clumps into lessons. They're all grouped by the different classes. And then through a subscription, anybody can view any of the classes and go through the whole series. We have about, I think it's like 160, 170 hours of video content up on the website. And so we created that, and we call that the Signal Integrity Academy. We have all the recordings. You can download the handouts as well. And in the last 5 or 6 years that I've been working with LaCroix, and then, of course, LaCroix got acquired by Teledyne, so it's right. Teledyne LaCroix now. So the last 5 years or so with Teledyne LaCroix, I've been focusing on best measurement practices. And so I have a lot of new content focused on best measurement practices. And I used to say that the principle when you do design and why you have best design practices, you want to get it right the first time, right? So you want to design it right the first time. And Dave Graff, he just retired recently, he was our CTO, he said, well, the reason you have measurements is because you want to get it right the second time. Because if it doesn't work, if you do the best design, but it still doesn't work, the most important thing you have to figure out is what went wrong. What is the root cause of the problem? And the number one most effective way of finding the root cause of that problem is from measurement. And so the more skilled you are in the measurements and the more skilled you are in the debugging process, then the quicker you can get it right the second time. So all the courses that we have on the Signal Integrity Academy are really about best design practice, and now I focus on best measurement practice. And so we have a lot of new content we've added. I've been doing a bunch of webinars about measurement techniques and, again, best measurement practices with our scopes to look at signal integrity problems, to look at power integrity problems. The new series I'm working on is TDR measurements to characterize interconnects, basically S-parameter measurements to look at the high-frequency characterization of interconnects. And so we have all those webinars up on our website as well, and they're all free for viewing. You just find one you want, you click on it, takes you to the viewing page, and you can download the handouts as well as view the recorded webinar.
All right, Eric, it's time for your off-the-cuff question now. I didn't warn you ahead of time, but here we go. You have one last meal on planet Earth. That's it. For the rest of your life, what's it going to be?
Okay, so I was at PCB West last month and had dinner. I was graciously invited to the dinner with Polar Instruments folks. I've worked with them for many years. They're a really great bunch of folks. And they had dinner over at Burke's, which is a very famous steak and seafood house in Santa Clara, around the corner there. And I have to say, I probably had one of the best steaks I've ever had at Burke's.
Nice.
So I would do that one again.
Yes. I love that, and I have actually had steaks at Burke's before myself. Excellent. Well, Eric, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for joining me on Fish Fry.
Hey, it's been my pleasure, Amelia, and always enjoy listening to all your podcasts, and now I'm so pleased that I'm part of one.
So just as Eric and I were discussing, there is something to be said about the role of a connector in the overall health of your system. But what about when copper just won't cut it? Sometimes it's because of speed, other times it's because of reliability or maybe even EMI constraints. So maybe we should start thinking about optical. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk called Next Generation Applications for Onboard Optics, Matt Burns from Samtech and I sit down and chat all about how you can use high-speed, high-reliability optics solutions in your next design. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of EE Journal. You can't miss it. It's right across the top. Or you can click the link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page. Or check out YouTube/EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel, YouTube/EEJournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 25th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.